Welcome to Pause to Go, the podcast that's all about making the most of life's transitions from middle school through menopause. I'm your host, Bree Luck, joining you as we embark on a journey of self-discovery and questionable decisions. Get ready for heartfelt conversations, expert insights, and personal stories that'll have you laughing, crying, and saying, "Thank goodness I'm not alone." If you've lost your midlife crisis survival kit, we've got you covered. So join me, won't you? And together, we can pause to go. So I am going in for my first colonoscopy in about a week and a half, which will be probably about a week before this episode airs. And that's had me thinking a lot about food and diet and midlife health, which of course I almost always think about. But I really wanted to have someone on who could speak about advocacy in the extreme, who could really talk about that feeling of when you think you're losing your mind because you don't feel well. And so I am delighted for you to meet Sonia Hunt. Sonia is a chief marketing officer. She is a best-selling author of the book Nut Job, which we'll talk about today. She has another one on the way too, which is very exciting. She's a global speaker. You should check out her TED Talk. I'll definitely link it in the show notes. And she is a health and wellness expert and coach. And her mission, which I believe she is carrying out beautifully, is to create a world in which everyone can thrive by building a personal foundation of health and well-being. So Sonia has a really interesting story. She started having food allergies when she was a very, very young child. It progressed and progressed and progressed, nearly killed her multiple times. And then in 2008, after an extreme reaction, she really turned her life around and turned her allergies around and can share a lot of wisdom about how she did that and how we can take those lessons not only into our dietary lives or health lives, but also into every aspect of our lives, our careers, our relationships, everything. So I know that you'll really enjoy this episode. It's for you if you have ever had a health issue, if you're feeling like you're going crazy because your body is not responding the way you want it to certain things and your brain is not working the way you expect it to, or if you've loved anyone who has had health issues. I think it's just a great, great interview for pretty much everyone, just like her book. So enjoy this episode with Sonia Hunt. Hi, Sonia. I'm so happy to have you here today because I really liked your TED Talk and I really like Nut Job, your book, but especially because as we are looking at midlife issues on the Pause to Go podcast, having people like you who are such incredible self-advocates for health and also cultural advocates for health. Like, how can we change the culture around us? I think that that's something that whether or not we have allergies, which P.S., many people in midlife develop allergies suddenly as our estrogen levels and progesterone levels go haywire, we develop allergies. But whether or not we have allergies, we're going to have some health issues. And I feel like you have such a great model for dealing with health issues and really taking responsibility for them.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. It just, you see me. And so thank you for that.
So I'm going to get right into it, right? And I'm going to get in with what for some people is the hardest question, which is, how old are you and where are you in your perimenopause journey?
50 and perimenopause. Definitely dealing with hot flashes. like to come and go when I least want them to be there. And it's very annoying. But yeah, it's a very fascinating thing to me. As you said, I've dealt with so many health issues in my entire life. So like here I am upon something else. And, you know, I feel like I'm already attacking it in the way that I've kind of gone about healing my other health issues as well. So yeah, definitely, definitely. I have no answers, but it's a journey.
It's all about the process, right? It really is. And I have to tell you, I have been doing this podcast for 2 years now. And last night, I'm also 50, by the way.
Woohoo.
And night before last, I had my first real hot flash. And the interesting thing about it was that, you know, I've been talking about hot flashes for so long. I've looked into why they happen. I've talked to so many people about their experiences of hot flashes. And then suddenly I had one. And instead of being completely annoyed by it, the timing was good, right? I mean, it was the middle of the night, but it wasn't like I was in a meeting where suddenly my face is turning red and I'm worried about the social impact of that. That wasn't an issue. I was just in bed, 3 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly had a hot flash. And I got really curious around it. I was like, oh, huh, this is what that feels like. Okay, this reminds me of being 12. This is what I felt like when a teacher called on me in class and I didn't have the answer. That's what this feels like, right? So it was really interesting. So I get that, not having the answers, but sort of being into the process of it, you know, and taking what you know from dealing with your other health issues and applying them to this. So let's talk about those health issues. Can we go back? Can you tell us your health journey? And we'll start with when you were a kid, because it's a really fascinating story.
Yes. Yes. So my parents are from India. They came in the 60s. My dad did his undergrad, his master's, and his MBA here in the US on the East Coast, where I'm from. And they got married kind of in between degrees. And they had, you know, three first generation American kids. And of the kids, you know, I would say my siblings have no health issues, you know, knock on wood. And I was the one, you know, that ended up kind of getting the brunt of it. So at age 3, I was diagnosed with severe food allergies, severe asthma, and environmental allergies. In my lifetime, I've been in the ER 18 plus times in emergent situations, hundreds of times in non-emergent. And non-emergent could mean like a severe nosebleed that's just not stopping. Scary.
And is that allergy related?
For me, yes. That's kind of what you know, we learned afterward. And 4 times in the ER in anaphylaxis, almost dead. The last time being in 2008. So, you know, you can say that my entire life I was sick. And the protocol was just 2 things. You know, don't eat the food you're allergic to, Sonia. At the time, of course, we're telling my parents that. And as we all know, with the labeling the way it is that is not easy at all. And take heavy Western medication to suppress your symptoms such that if an allergic reaction happens again, your body should be able to withstand, you know, a very, very dramatic incident. And so all of my life, we lived this way. I've taken very strong medications. I've done all different kinds of therapies, oral immunotherapy, desensitization shots, taking strong medications. There's always kind of like an east-west, right? Having parents from Asia, east-west viewpoint on everything from food, you know, to health, to mindset around this. And fast forward, as I also got older, I started to gain more allergies. So as you were saying, right, and sometimes people don't have any food allergies their entire life, and all of a sudden, like, boom, they hit like 30 or 40 or 50, and it's like, oh my God, I actually have an allergy to something that I ate, you know, for decades. So 2008, 4th time in anaphylaxis on the ER table, definitely my worst, most dramatic, most toxic anaphylaxis. And I say that because it left me with hives all over my body for a year of my life, which I didn't even know was possible because we had never discussed it. So like in my scalp, like all the way down, all the way to my toes. And as you can imagine, right, incredibly jarring. I say I looked like, you know, Chet from Weird Science, if you ever saw that movie back in the day. And, you know, it was horrible to have that all over you and still expect to go to work in the office. I saw pre-COVID and socialize and go out and think, you know, date, things like that. So I refer to that time period as my rock bottom. And when, you know, everything in my life basically blew up, and now sitting in the ER for 3 days, and they kept me for so long because the diameter of the hives was so large and they wanted them to go down a little bit before they released me. So sitting there for 3 days, everything's kind of flashing before you. Why is this happening again? Why can't we figure out why it's happening? Is there a different way? So much detriment to mental, spiritual, and emotional health because of my physical health issues. I was just, all my life, I think I've just been so stressed, you know? Mm-hmm. And it makes sense because when you have something like severe food allergies, there is not one moment that you can, you know, stop thinking or asking the question of what's in this before you put it into your mouth. There's just not one. And if you don't, you're taking a chance. And in my case, if you take that chance, you possibly could die. So I'm kind of thinking about all this. And in all of that misery, to be honest, some little light, you know, spark of fire, you know, of anger just lit. And I started to make like kind of a pact with the universe. And I was like, if I get out of here, I'm going to change everything. You know, I'm going to like change my life and my work and my health. And I say that, you know, the universe has a sense of humor because those hives didn't go away for a year. So it was almost as if that lesson wasn't going to leave me until I really made well on my pact. And so that was the beginning of a brand new journey for me where I did many things and then, you know, wrote a book about it. And at that time period where I kind of started after 1 year went by and started this process, it became 10 years. And it wasn't that it took 10 years to do work. It was just that we figured things out. And then we were constantly what I call like testing, tracking, and tweaking. And at the end of the 10 years in 2020, the test results came back that all of my food allergies are gone. And I've been in remission since 2020. So knock on wood.
Oh my gosh, that's just so amazing. It's like you did design thinking with your health.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
So I think it's worth noting that in 2008, I think I've got this right, that when you were at that restaurant, you didn't even know what, you didn't order anything. Like there was no, all they could figure was that there was some possibility of cross-contamination. It just happened, right?
Yeah. I mean, when we took it all back, right? My doctors believe it was cross-contamination in the food, but also two new allergies popped up in my testing after we were able to kind of test. Mm-hmm. And those are things, one of the items was halibut. The other one was corn. You know, two things that I've eaten, you know, I mean, I feel like every restaurant in America has halibut. It's like if there's fish, there's halibut on the menu. So yes, that was kind of where my body, just as I got older, you know, in the beginning at three, it was severe peanut tree nut, but then it became, you know, avocado, different kinds of melons. Soy and sesame were lower on the, you know, spectrum. Then there's avocado. Now there's corn, like just so, so many different things. And there are all the different forms. There's the raw item. There's the cooked item. There's the oil. There's the flour, right? So you have to consider, and sometimes you can eat like the cooked and not the raw. Many people like for tomatoes, that happens. For me, it was everything, right? And think about it. Even if you go to a spa, spas these days actually use avocado oil. I didn't even know that. And then I started to somewhere in that 10-year, you know, period, say like, you know, hey, I have a nut allergy. And do any of your products have nuts? And they would give me the bottles and look. And then I would see avocado oil. And I was like, oh my goodness, we're starting to use avocado oil now at spas, like on the body. And that actually, in particular, avocado on my skin would make hives break out. So just again, like so much to know. And the fact that there was more coming at that time, you know, what we did through testing and found out, again, that was enough for me to say, it was kind of like, I always put my hands up when I say this, that everything from three to that point, you know, I was just done. I was like done all that information, you know, and I just treated it as it was incorrect. And now I needed to focus on how I was moving going forward. And that meant relearning, redesigning, reinvigorating myself with everything, with food, with products, with mindset, with exercise, with air quality, everything. So it was a lot.
Yes, it is a lot. And I really am seeing just you sharing that part of the story makes me feel the emotional impact of having that anxiety all the time for you and your family, for the reinforcement of that, for your relationships, how that had to have an impact in every aspect of your life. And it just can't be ignored. It's so important because then it becomes a cycle, a reinforcing cycle.
And actually, what you just said, there's a key word, right? It can't be ignored. But it was ignored, right? And to no fault at all of anybody, it's just that, like, you know, culturally, and in Western medicine as well, right? When you have a physical health problem, you are working on the physical health side. You know, no one's asking you, like, how do you feel, right? No one's asking about kind of, you know, your mindset, your mental health, your emotional, your spiritual health. No one's asking about the burden that you're carrying, the shame that you might be carrying. So we weren't having those types of conversations. And again, I mean, my parents were so young, they weren't equipped, even because they didn't grow up that way, with that side of it. And they did the exact right thing. They were like, we need to keep this child safe, you know, from food and from going through this situation again. You know, in 2008, when I realized how heavy this was on me for so many decades, that's why I think, again, in that little fire that got, you know, sparked, I was like, this is not anymore about physical health. It's way bigger. This is a whole body health, holistic viewpoint that I have to take. And if nobody's going to help me, I will go figure it out myself. And that's kind of the path, because again, I four times in anaphylaxis, you know, I'm not a cat. I knew like I didn't have nine lives. If there was a fifth time, I believed it would have been game over for sure.
So then you developed the three to be approach.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I am an engineer by degree. And in my career, I've moved from engineering to product to marketing. And today I'm a chief marketing officer here in Silicon Valley. So my training was very analytical, very, you know, root cause. Why are customers purchasing? Why are they not purchasing, right? But getting into the details. And I had this realization that there might be a way that I could use my skill set to actually improve my health. I felt like I needed a plan, like a program or something. And when I got home and I was searching all over Google, you know, there's really just nothing out there. And so I put a big whiteboard in my house and I just started doing what I do, you know, as a CMO. I started writing out kind of like a vision, you know, where do I want to see myself in the next month, 6 months, you know, 1 year. Let's develop like a North Star. I need something to like keep looking to when going gets tough, and it's going to get tough. You know, I put this thing on the whiteboard that said, I want to try to heal and eliminate my food allergies. No idea if that was possible, right? Never, ever talked about it with any doctor. And so I kind of started to develop my own plan because it wasn't there. And when I did this in conversation with my parents, I remember one time asking them. When you had children, what were your wishes for them? And they just had three things. They said, we always just wanted to make sure that our kids were healthy and they were safe and that they, you know, prospered in life. And I think at that time when we discussed it, they talked about physical, you know, safety, health, prosperity. I now kind of thought, oh, this really resonates though across, think about it, mental health, mental safety, mental wellness, you know, spiritual, same, emotional, same.
Mm.
And so I put together kind of this mantra on my whiteboard that said, be healthy, be safe, and be well. Three steps, right? To be healthy, be safe, and be well. I called it three to be. And in my book, I go through and it actually has like a diagram of the steps that I went through to start this healing journey. And the first step starts at mental health, because I believe that you can't make conscious decisions, especially regarding your health, probably, you know, in with everything, but you can't make them unless you are kind of rid of this stress and this burden and the shame and all of that. So I started my journey really working on mental health and the physical side, right? I was on medication, so that was just kind of the plan. So 3TB became the framework that I wrote about. And, you know, it is still something that I utilize to this day because my life is in a different place, right? I'm now learning how to eat things that almost killed me many times for decades.
I want to circle back, and it gets back to the be healthy and the mental health side of it a little bit, because I think that this will really resonate with our listener, and certainly for me, which is around the issue of shame. Because I think of how often we hold shame for not being in optimal health, for asking, for needing to ask for help, for being really anything less than optimal. And
yes.
I know that that was a big factor in your journey. What are some specific strategies that you might have for recognizing? Because I think often we don't even recognize it as shame because it's so much a part of how we begin to just interact in the world. But how do you work through that? What is the strategy for recognizing it and then working through it?
Yeah, and the realization, you know, in that 1 year at home with the hives was everything from I didn't really know myself to like, what is that authentic true self, right? To who do I want to be and why?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with limited time on this earth, what do I want to put into the world? How do I want to live the time that I have? And I talk about this in the book. You know, I felt like until 2008, my life was on autopilot because everybody always took care of me, right? I was this broken child, the sick child who then became an adult. And even like when I left Philadelphia and got a job out in Silicon Valley, my first job after college, that was the first time I was now on my own. And my parents were like flipping out. They're like, do you even know like how to take care of yourself? And I was like, I don't know, but I guess I have to figure it out, right? So the work at that time and why I started with mental health was like deep. So it was a lot of like deep reading of other people's transformation stories, how, you know, things like therapy helped. I absolutely went into therapy. Exercises in journaling. You know, I'm the queen of, again, engineering and marketing background, asking those really deep questions that I'd write on the whiteboard or write in a journal, and then having to answer all these questions about myself and figuring out just who am I, right? And it was so valuable for me because it started to get me out of that autopilot phase and now into a more empowered state. Right? It started getting me out of living unconsciously to living consciously because I was asking myself that question, right? How do I want to live? How do I want to show up? And this wasn't necessarily even tied to my health situation. It was me as the being. And so in the book, I kind of have like a whole list of questions that I ask myself. And, you know, I felt like once I started to really see this beautiful person that I hated for so long because I would constantly have all these issues. I was like, oh my God, it just started to like set me free. And I'm not kidding. Like even my skin started to like vibrate.
I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, so going that deep in, you know, with assisted help, like therapist or like on your own, I was like, again, reading a ton, researching, you know, and with my own set of many journals, just sitting peacefully meditating and just really digging into deep of everything to figure out who I am and why, and start to let go of the why is this happening to me, right? And realize, I always say that, you know, in my pain, I found power. Mm-hmm. And I did. I found power now to be on this journey to help people to heal and thrive so that they can live the life they want. And part of that was me figuring out, what life do I want? If someone has taken care of my entire life for me, I actually don't know what life I want. Now I'm being forced to figure it out.
Can we talk about food?
I'm a big foodie, so...
Yeah, I think about you talking about going to the market every day. Tell us a little bit about how your relationship to food has evolved through that time. Because I know that you have to have charted a very new relationship with food as you've moved forward.
Yes. I feel like I've charted that so many times, like over and over and over.
It's like bad relationships.
It is. It really is. And honestly, like, thank goodness that when you have severe food allergies, a lot of people also deal with like anorexia, bulimia as well. Right. And just thank goodness that never happened to me. But it's such a love-hate relationship with food. I come from a massive foodie family, all who had to now like adjust, you know, to all of this. And so in 2008, I just went into my pantry and I just got rid of everything again. And I was like, all right, let's just kind of start everything from scratch. And from my parents' side in India, you know, there's not these like large giant supermarkets like we have in the US, right? So you either go to the market every day or the market comes to you. Like somebody with a basket on her head or his head, which has like vegetables, could have some seafood on ice, like you name it. And imagine you're in a high-rise building and they're kind of like walking through the neighborhood and saying like, you know, vegetables. And you just look out your window and you're like, come on up. Like that's the market literally coming to your house. And so I saw this all as a child and it was just incredibly, incredibly fascinating to me. And so I went back and my mom and I talked a lot about like the Ayurvedic diet and just again, like all fresh. So as we kind of now talk here in the US about buying from the perimeter, right? So all fresh ingredients, Indian food has just incredible vegetarian food. We have never been a vegetarian family. You know, we're non-vegetarian, but over time I just ate more vegetarian and pescatarian. Even now, actually, that change to just completely get rid of animal protein is doing well in the perimenopausal stage, I will say. And these are all little tests that I continue to do, right? That test, track, and tweak. So I went back. I mean, I've been cooking since I was 5. Culturally, like, you know, that's something that when we're little, we kind of always help mom and dad in the kitchen. And also because of my allergies. So I had the chops to do it. You know, just life gets busy, right? And it's easier to go out and eat or these days like order Uber Eats. But I would make like a very hard stance of like that first year I didn't eat out at all and just cooked everything and just stuff that is very healing. Lentils, you know, as proteins, brown rice, vegetables. It could be like a piece of wild fish, things like that. And that also started to heal my entire body, right? Because I was dealing with allergies, but during this time and through additional testing, I feel like I've tested everything in my body at this point. I have genetic predispositions. And one of those predispositions is type 2 diabetes. So imagine, right? Like you're getting all this information. You're like, oh my God, right? So I'm not allergic to spaghetti, pasta, but now I felt like I was eating it all the time. Okay, boom. Now that's out the door, right? or, you know, making things with some kind of like grain flour to make pasta at home, which is all really easy. So yeah, I had to completely redefine, you know, absolutely have a hard stance with many things that I still do today. But I also know life is about flow. So if I go out and have chicken or something here and there, I don't beat myself up about it. But I try to make good choices, right? I'll ask the questions, is this organic? Is this, you know, kind of from a local farm? And then I'm making those conscious decisions of like, okay, you know what? I'll just skip it and I'll have something vegetarian tonight or you know, some seafood or something. So it was a lot of, again, like thinking about what was in that pantry at the time in 08. Was that serving me for my allergies? Yes, but it wasn't serving me for all these other kinds of health things. So now we had to kind of relearn again and now add that layer of things like genetic predispositions of, you know, hormonal changes, metabolism changes as you get older. But my method of testing, tracking, and tweaking, like it literally will work for anything in your life. You know, it works in a business standpoint. And that's why I was like, you know what, I want to make this work, you know, for my health. And as you know, right, if you're kind of testing for allergies, the first thing they have you do is like elimination diet. Well, that's the method, right? See how you feel, mm-hmm. Write it in a journal, write it in a spreadsheet, and then, you know, we'll do some testing.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to do that because at the very least, it makes you far more mindful. You don't generalize your feelings. You don't, or your experiences. You are really able to start to recognize patterns and to get in touch with how your body and emotions are responding on a day-by-day basis, hour by hour, food by food, whatever it is. I think about how you're talking about going to the market. I was diagnosed with chronic Lyme when I was in my early 40s, And I had a lot of food sensitivity that developed around that time, right? Of course I did. Like there's all this inflammation in my body. And so I couldn't have gluten. I couldn't have any kind of sugar, a lot of fruit. I couldn't have certainly no processed sugars, but also a lot of fruits. And I was miserable. So I did an elimination diet. That's how I knew those were some of the triggering factors. And I ate around those problem foods and beverages for a while. And then we moved to Amsterdam for a year. And when we were in Amsterdam, we lived very close to an open air market. And we also had a teeny, teeny, tiny refrigerator that was about the size of a cooler and we're a family of four. So I was going to the market every day and getting my fresh vegetables and I would get fish from the fish market and all sorts of stuff, but everything was very fresh. And all of my food sensitivities went away while I was there. Mm-hmm. Came back to America. Some of them came back, right? Not as bad. They're manageable. But it was just very interesting to me how different it was. And of course, they don't have the same kind of processed. Wheat is processed differently. It's grown differently. Their GMOs are different. Everything's very different over there. So certainly that's a factor as well. But it makes me really miss the market, the open air market lifestyle, even in Holland.
Yeah. Yes. And that culture is the same in India because they don't have the big, big refrigerators, right? You're getting food and you're cooking it that day. And if there's leftovers, you have a small fridge. And then the next day or the day after, you're kind of doing it all over. And so, you know, our culture here is completely different. I mean, if anything, people have a large single family home and then they have an even larger freezer in like, you know, the garage or something. So the style of living here is just about bulk. And trying to get like food for the masses, there's no personalization around it. So we have to personalize it, right? And that's what like, I mean, even during COVID, I went to the market, I shielded it up and I had my gloves and like you name it. And I was down at the Whole Foods because I was like, I can't like be eating frozen food and canned food and I just, you know, I won't eat. And so, you know, I would go like every 2 to 3 days and have my little cart. And then I was like in there quick and out of there because, you know, I didn't want to set back all the work like that I did. Right. And it is, it's a harmony. So again, like, it's not that I don't necessarily eat things. Of course, I've eaten stuff out of a box, right? Box pasta or something. But it's about making those conscious decisions for the most part, right? It's so easy, like learn how to make fresh pasta at home, just like 3 ingredients. Then why not? You can make it and you can freeze that, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that I learned at that time also was in my work, I was traveling globally. Work was busy. Life was busy. I basically was slowing things down and saying, all right, hang on a second. You know, I got to take care of my health. And in order to do that, I just can't keep like go, go, go and constantly be like, I have too much to do. Therefore, I can't cook a meal that's healthier for me. If anything, that's the first thing that needs to happen. And then I'll get to the rest of the stuff, right? Because if I'm not healthy and safe and well, none of the other stuff is going to matter anyway. That's how it looked.
Totally. Out. Totally. Oh, and I'm just, oh, you're making me think I have a very 50-year-old problem going on, which is that I'm about to go in for my first colonoscopy. Welcome to 50, right? Here's your colonoscopy. And that's fine. I was like, that's okay. It's kind of like a cleanse. It'll feel good to be clean, right? I have a couple of girlfriends and we meet up in a hot tub once a week and we call it the hot tub business meeting. So we've had lots of discussions about, oh, look at your colonoscopy. It's going to be your cleanse. But I got the instructions and I knew about the day before. So the day before, for people who haven't gotten a colonoscopy yet, the day before you have to take some kind of concoction. It varies depending on your medical provider that basically makes you clean out your whole colon so that they can get in there and scope and see everything they need to see. What I didn't know is that you have 5 days before that you have to eat differently. And the instructions that I had were no fiber. So that's like no leafy green vegetables, nothing that I eat. Like I eat a primarily plant-based diet. And it's like, oh, no whole grains. No, I'm going to feel like crap for that 5 days before. So I've really been trying to figure out what can I even eat that's going to make me feel good. I'm so stressed out about the 5 days before, not stressed out about the colonoscopy.
And I had mine. I just had mine. And I don't even, honestly, I don't even remember about the 5 days, but yeah, I thought as well, I was like, oh, great, gonna like lose 10 pounds after I have a colonoscopy. Didn't happen, but it is like, just that, you know, the where I went back to right after 2008 was I had to, and I wanted to have like a healthy and beautiful relationship with food. Right. Again, like I come from a massively foodie family. You know, it's like the first thing we talk about in the morning is like, what's for dinner? So just having this other side of it that was negative and, you know, upsetting, having those reactions and so forth, you know, I just wanted to get out of that and move to, and really the journey was almost like, I call it coming back to our roots, you know, on mm-hmm. Eastern culture, because food is, you know, appreciated. You're very grateful to have one meal a day, let alone three. You know, it's simple stuff, right? It's lentils, it's vegetables, it's herbs. If you've got money, it's lean proteins, right? If you don't, you know, this is where you have many people in regions of India that are vegetarian. So I kind of came back to my roots with this appreciation for that event of having a meal and what that meant and being grateful for the list of things that I could have, even if I couldn't have a gazillion other things. And that was a journey. You know, that was definitely a journey after having that, you know, those items constantly put me into an ER.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Your book is a great resource, not only for people with food allergies, but for people who are going through any kind of health issue, and for anyone who loves anybody with any kind of health issue, which pretty much means everybody. So how can people find your book? How can people find you? Let us know how to get in touch with you.
Yes, please, please reach out. SoniaHunt.com, SoniaHunt. There's a link to my book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. My TED Talk is there. All the socials. Please connect. LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. You can email me through there. Happy to answer any questions. You know, I'm also certified as an integrative health coach. So I do, in the food allergy community, I've, you know, many parents who come to me that are just like, God, we want this result for our child. We just don't know where to begin. So I, you know, again, in my pain, I truly, truly found purpose. And my whole world is health and wellness from a business perspective, a speaking, coaching, you know, perspective. And my second book is actually started now, which I'm really excited about. Yes. So, you know, knock on wood, I will get that manuscript kind of completed this year. And, you know, using that baseline of three to be now, you know, how can we dig further into that and really start to heal? You know, this book for me, I always knew if I wrote a book, this would be the first to really tell my story. And when I named it Nut Job, it is truly how I felt. And from a bullying perspective, what people called me. So there's this duality in many things, like in my life, duality between that, duality between East and West. So I now, you know, have the benefit of doing so much work over 10 years, but helping people and saying, you don't have to take 10 years to do this. Here's how you get, you know, on your way at least.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming on today. I look forward to the next book. Please keep me posted on that. And
Thank you. And
I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Pause to Go podcast. Special thanks to Codebase Coworking and WTJU Radio for their support. This has been an Awkward Sage production.